And good evening, Dr. John McDougall. For your good health, I don't joke, this evening, in preparation for this show, I ate 8 cloves of garlic. My engineer laughs. I ate 8 cloves of garlic, and I sat in a hot tub at 106 degrees in an attempt to raise my body temperature to 101. And after 10 minutes, I was uncomfortable, but I stuck it out, and I made it for almost a half an hour by the advice of our guest tonight, Dr. Agatha Thrash, MD, author of many, many books, including Home Remedies, More Home Remedies, Natural Remedies, books on fatigue, books on infertility, prostate problems, vegetarian diets. Dr. Agatha Thrash runs the Uchi Pines Institute in Seal, Alabama. She is a pathologist by education, but by practice, she's a family doctor, I'd have to say. Isn't that true, Dr. Thrash?
That's right, John.
You're just a plain old country doctor, and you just offer people things that really work.
We try to do that. We try to keep people well, and if they get sick, we try to heal them with things that aren't going to harm the body.
Well, why is it? You know, you have being a pathologist is a very lucrative field. Your husband is a medical doctor. Why is it that you folks went into a practice of medicine that I'd have to say is not very lucrative, and that really is demanding in the sense that you've got to educate people, you have to deal with very simple, non-profitable things such as feeding people healthy diets, and we might as well start out in the beginning and tell people that you feed folks a pure vegetarian, low-fat diet. Mm-hmm. You do things that really escape the modern doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, a number of years ago, I think almost simultaneously, my husband and I both began to feel that we were not as effective in the traditional medical circles as we had anticipated we would be when we were in medical school and when we were dreaming of being doctors as children and thought we would go out and cure the world and everybody would get well.
The Ben Casey syndrome, right? The doctor killed her.
And so when we began to recognize that this was not the case, that people didn't get well most of the time, unless they just sort of got well in spite of what we did, and that often we were the cause of some of their problems through the medications that we used or through some of the surgeries that we recommended. And so we began to take a new look at things medical. And at about that time, I was teaching a course, which was a required course for the University of Georgia graduates at that time, in anatomy and physiology. It was called Human Anatomy. And I enjoyed teaching the course. I had loved physiology when I was in medical school, but when I taught it was when I really began to understand some things about the human body. So with all of these events occurring somewhat simultaneously, my husband and I decided that the best thing we could do for our patients was to study physiology and learn simple treatments for disease that would cooperate with physiology. And so as we began to do that, we started treating some very simple things at first. Then people began asking us to help them with more and more complex things, things that were more and more serious.
Well, you do that today. I mean, for example, one of the calls I get quite often in this show is, Dr. McDougall, what do I do with chronic fatigue? And I say, you wait until Dr. Agatha Thrash is on this radio show, and she'll tell you what to do. In fact, you have a whole book on fatigue.
That's right. We wrote a book a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and chronic fatigue is one of those things that we have been very successful in treating. It isn't easy to treat, but if the person sticks with a program, usually they can get some very good results.
And what is that program?
Well, there are several things. One is exercise, and a person who has chronic fatigue doesn't feel like exercising, but they should exercise pretty much to their own tolerance. And another thing is to be regular in all of one's habits. That means go to bed on time, get up on time, eat meals on time, get exercise on time. Anything that one can program, one should program it. There will be so many interruptions in a day anyway that the person is never regimented. And they begin to feel better just with taking more exercise if exercise has not already been in their program. Then a second thing, we give them a totally vegetarian diet. That helps a lot, I think, because a vegetarian diet is generally strength-producing. And in addition to that, a lot of people have allergies who get the immune system weakened by the chronic fatigue syndrome. And since a totally vegetarian diet does not stimulate people to have allergies as much as a meat, milk, eggs-based diet does, they often begin to feel better with that. But the treatment that we feel is specific for chronic fatigue is the fever treatments that we take.
Heat therapy, like I was trying to do to myself tonight.
That's right. And it boosts the immune system. We don't know exactly what it does to what factors cause chronic fatigue, but somehow it works together for good for these patients. And the way that we do it is that we give one treatment a day for 5 days. Then we skip 2 days. So it usually works out well to give the treatments Monday through Friday, skip the weekend, and then start again on Monday. We give this for 3 weeks and then skip a week.
And somebody could do that like I was trying to do tonight in a hot tub. Is that not correct? You can raise your body temperature?
Yes, you can do it in a hot tub. It's really good if you get instructions on how to do it from someone who knows how to give hot baths to bring the mouth temperature up, such as the instruction we give in our book, Home Remedies. In this book, we tell step-by-step exactly what to do, tell people how high to bring the mouth temperature, how to keep the patient comfortable, and we discuss, of course, all about the immune system and what effects one can expect from the treatment.
Yes, but Dr. Agatha Thrash, do you tell them in this book how to be comfortable after 10 minutes of this heat therapy tonight? I was not just sweating. I was not just hot. I was also uncomfortable, and I just thought to myself, how in the world, if I was trying to get well, could I do this for a half an hour, 45 minutes, or whatever you recommend? But Dr. Agatha Thrash will tell us what she recommends in a moment. I'm Dr. John McDougall, and I'll be back with more information for your good health. Just to give you some idea of the broad scope of medical practice that my guest has tonight, listen to the title of some of her books: Fatigue, the Prostate, Charcoal, Home Remedies, Nutrition for Vegetarians, PMS, Food Allergies Made Simple, Home Remedies, More Home Remedies, Natural Remedies, More Natural Remedies, Natural Health Care for Your Child, Poison with a capital C. My guest, Dr. Agatha Thrash, former pathologist, right now just a good family kind of doctor who'll help you get well with natural things. Dr. Thrash, how do I tolerate that heat sitting in that hot tub? Because that's a very, very effective therapy. As a matter of fact, there's, you know, a tremendous amount of research, high-tech research going on and trying to raise the body temperature to deal with things as difficult to treat as cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The way to feel comfortable is, number one, bring the temperature up rather slowly instead of getting into a bath with very hot water and quickly raising the mouth temperature. You get into a bath with rather cool water, say at 102 to 103 degrees. Then after about 2 or 3 minutes, start raising the temperature of the water rather gradually until the water temperature has gotten up to perhaps 108 or 110. And then the mouth temperature will begin to elevate more quickly. If you start out slowly, somehow the patient tolerates it better. A second thing, keep the face cool. Keep a cool cloth around the throat and keep it changed regularly. That generally means get a bucket of ice and put two or three washcloths in it. Squeeze one of those from the ice water and bathe the face frequently, maybe two or three times a minute.
And this is all in your book, Home Remedies. Is that correct?
That's right. We tell it exactly.
In addition to chronic fatigue syndrome, what other disease maladies do you encourage heat therapy for?
We use it for a wide variety of things. Most types of infection, including bacterial infections, respond very nicely to hot baths. We use it for patients who have pain, those who have arthritis, for people who have cancer. We use it in a variety of skin diseases. Certain types of eczema will work very well using this. And infertility can be treated with hot baths. And
I've heard of hot baths being used to cause infertility. That's what the Japanese do when they take hot showers.
Yes.
And increase the testicular temperature. This is kind of the opposite, isn't it?
Well, that's for men, but for women who have no menstrual periods, for women who have perhaps become vegetarian and lose their menstrual periods for a time. Or make a long trip and lose their menstrual periods, or have an illness and lose their menstrual periods. We've very successfully restored these with the use of hot baths.
Let's talk about it.
But for men, if we put them in a hot bath and let them take a hot bath daily for the first 7 days. Or 8 days of their wife's menstrual cycle, then stop the hot baths, they get a rebound in sperm production. And so for infertility in men, the 5 days after they stop the hot baths, they get their peak production of spermatozoa. And it's a great help for men who have low fertility.
Dr. Thrash, I'd like to get some of our listeners on the line with you. Aurora, welcome to Your Good Health. You're on with Dr. Thrash.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I have a low thyroid.
Uh-huh.
And my hair is falling out in large amounts, and it's I have very thin hair now. And I also would like to. I also have dry skin, dry eyes, and dry hair. Everything. You know.
That all could be related to the thyroid, could it, Dr. Thrash?
Yes, I think that certainly it could all be related to the thyroid, and probably does have to do with a low acting thyroid. For some people, it's very helpful to give them hydrotherapy. That's water treatments. To the thyroid area. It isn't difficult to do, and we describe how to do it in our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians. And since the treatment for people who have low thyroid is partly dietary, we included the entire treatment for the thyroid in our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians. There are several foods that are common in American dietary that inhibit the functioning of the thyroid. And these include cabbage and carrots and peaches and peanuts with the skins on and pears, soybeans and a number of other beans.
A class called goitrogens, isn't that right? Aurora, thank you very much for calling. Dr. Agatha Thrash, I'd like to know a little more, because you know you have some answers for me that people are always asking me questions, but I'd like to know a little bit more after this break about dietary causes of hypothyroidism, and maybe you can give me some hints that I can pass on to other people. I'm Dr. John McDougall. I'll be back with more information for Your Good Health. Good evening, Dr. John McDougall. For Your Good Health, our guest is the founder and director of the Yuchi Pines Institute in Seal, Alabama. I'll be giving you a phone number later on for the Institute, and also an 800 number for her books. There are many, many, many books she's written here in terms of simple things that you can do for yourself that are highly effective. Dr. Thrash, why is it, particularly with women, I just see woman after woman after woman with hypothyroidism, there's mm-hmm. got to be an environmental cause.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Well, we feel that there are some things that are environmental, but some of these I think we don't know. There are some people who get an inflammation of the thyroid gland, perhaps due to a virus or perhaps due to a toxin.
How about due to an immune reaction like you do with rheumatoid arthritis toward food?
Yes, I believe that too.
Or juvenile diabetes.
Yes, I think that that there's no question but that there are a number of people who react rather violently to foods or chemicals in the environment that cause them to have an allergic reaction or some kind of sensitivity reaction that inflames the thyroid. And then, of course, a number of people, a number of culture groups, subcultures in the United States and other parts of the world use foods that are high in thiourea. And I think that we know that these foods are likely to cause a problem, and I gave a list of
those. The goitrogens that those we're talking about, like cabbage, most people know cabbage is one of them.
That's right, and I believe it was in one of the North European nations where cabbage is one of the staples of diet mm-hmm. anyway. They had a large crop of cabbages and stockpiled them, but during the winter they ran short of food for cattle, so they began to give cabbages to cattle to supplement the silage for them, and the goitrogens were excreted in the milk. School children given milk began to get goiters.
Hmm.
And they traced back and found that the problem was the cabbages fed to the cows.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. And Anita, welcome to Your Good Health.
Oh, hello, Dr. McDougall and Dr. Thrash.
Hello, Anita.
Hello. I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I wonder if that's what I really have, but I would like to know what you would suggest for that. I'm in an awful lot of chronic pain,
uh-huh.
and my hamstrings and my legs are so tight. My body is a total wreck.
Uh-huh.
And you're obviously a young woman, too.
Well, not really. If you think 50 is, I just turned 50.
That's young, isn't it, Agatha?
It certainly is.
Yep.
Yeah, I was young when this happened at age 42.
Okay, what do you do for somebody like this? Because this is a new kind of the sexy disease to have, Dr. Thrash, is fibromyalgia these days.
Yes, fibromyalgia is the bane of the life of many people, and we have found a number of things that will help them. One is stretching exercises. There are a number of books on doing stretches. You can get these from a public library or from a magazine counter. There are certain magazines that are devoted to doing stretching.
How about diet?
And diet is most important. We think that fibromyalgia may be due to food sensitivities in most individuals, if not in all. So we start out with this kind of program.
And heat therapy? Do you use heat therapy with
we
that?
We use hot baths. Hot baths are very helpful for them. We give them fever treatments, bringing the mouth temperature up to 101 or 102 while mm-hmm. keeping the face cool and the neck cool. And it's important anytime the mouth temperature rises above 100 in a hot bath to keep the face cool.
Anita, there's some good bits of advice for you. You can give those things a try. Certainly, you're going to be safe and highly effective things to do. I'm Dr. John McDougall. I'll be back with more information for your good health. I'm Dr. John McDougall here for Your Good Health. My guest, Dr. Agatha Thrash, MD, pathologist, director of Uchi Pimes Institute, Seal, Alabama. And the book Charcoal is one of your favorites, Dr. Thrash, because you believe charcoal is a pretty, almost a panacea. We used to use it in the emergency room as a panacea for anybody that tried to poison themselves,
uh-huh.
but you've extended it to many, many more uses than that, and most of those uses are documented in the scientific literature.
Yes, we have found charcoal to be one of the best of the simple remedies. One of the ones that we have been delighted about is the treatment of the brown recluse spider bite. We have had 4 cases now of brown recluse treated vigorously with charcoal compresses or charcoal soaks, just mixing some charcoal in water and having them submerge the part in the water for perhaps an hour at a time. And we've had some extremely good results. The first case we had was a woman who was bitten and changed the compresses every 30 minutes for the first day, got up every 2 hours during the night, changed the compresses, and within 5 days, she had started out with a blood blister the second day, but by 5 days, the blood blister had gone away, and the brown recluse spider bite did not make the big ulcer that it usually makes.
But you also give charcoal internally.
Yes.
And the scientific literature says that it's a really way, a good way to profoundly lower your cholesterol level.
Yes, it can reduce not only cholesterol, but also triglyceride levels, and is far safer. In fact, it is quite a safe medicine, and many of the drugs, in fact, all the drugs used to lower cholesterol are not what one would call safe medications.
But it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting to swallow that black powder, Dr. Agatha Thrash.
Well, the thing that you can do is empty a chocolate milk carton down the sink. Don't drink the chocolate milk, but use the carton to put the material in, then just put a straw in it, put it way back on the back of the tongue, and drink it down and pretend that you're drinking down chocolate milk. And it's really quite good for nausea and vomiting. It's the treatment of choice for intestinal gas, and it's the treatment of choice for diarrhea, and for a person who has just an upset stomach. They're not vomiting, they're not particularly nauseous, but they just feel uncomfortable.
And what would you recommend if somebody wanted to lower their cholesterol? How much charcoal and how should they take it?
They should take a heaping tablespoonful stirred in water 4 times a day for 2 to 3 months or more.
And you can buy that over the counter at your drugstore. You just ask the pharmacist for it. You do not need a doctor's prescription. But we do need to warn them that it will also deactivate, because it's a non-specific absorbent. It'll deactivate anything else they take, like any other medication.
Yes, if they're dependent on another medication, like epilepsy medication or blood pressure medication, they can pretty much count on it that they're going to take that up too.
Yeah, the charcoal will deactivate all your other medicines if you take it at
charcoal
the same time.
Charcoal is very indiscriminate. It takes up any poison. So since drugs are classified for charcoal as a poison, the charcoal just takes up the drugs as well.
Charcoal's pretty smart, isn't it? Sam,
pretty
welcome
smart.
To your good health.
Hello.
Sam, welcome to your good health. You're on with Dr. Thrash.
Hello. I'd like to ask Dr. Thrash a question, please.
All right.
About 2 years ago, I had a prostate operation. I had it was called a TURP, and they couldn't take out as much as which they thought would be necessary because there would have been too much bleeding, and they said they would have had to give me a transfusion.
Uh-huh.
This was at the Veterans Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And since then, I've taken 3 of the PSA tests,
uh-huh.
And I had one about last March. It was 6.4,
mm-hmm.
And I understand normal is only up to 4. And a few months later, it went up to 7.1,
mm-hmm.
And then a couple of months after that, which was about 2 or 3 months ago, it went down to 6.7.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little concerned about cancer, but they told me in many cases, if the prostate is a little big, the PSA test, it'll show a little high.
So see if I can formulate the question. Sam's worried about getting prostate cancer, and it sounds like he's also also interested in how do you treat that common condition of a large prostate that causes men so many urinary symptoms. How do you deal with those two issues, Dr. Thrash?
Well, if he has...
I had the operation, though, 2 years ago.
Okay, uh-huh. Sam, let's hear what Dr. Thrash has to say.
Yeah.
If he has any infection in the area, he should treat that with hot sitz baths. But just for an enlarged prostate or for an elevated PSA, when cancer of the prostate is not really suspected, I would suggest that he take saw palmetto berries. He can get this from a health food store, And we have had some very good results from symptoms of an enlarged prostate by using two capsules three times a day, or one a cup of the tea 3 to 4 times a day.
Excuse me, a cup of what?
It's called saw palmetto. Can you spell that for Sam?
No, I know of that, but what was the last one that she said about a cup a day?
That's a cup of the tea of saw palmetto berry.
Okay, it's a cup of the tea. Thank you very much for calling, Sam. Mary, welcome to Your Good Health.
Oh, I wanted to ask Dr. Trash if she had used the heat treatment or some other kind of treatment for polymyositis, which I think is an autoimmune disease.
We have treated polymyositis with heat treatments, and some cases have responded really quite nicely. But we institute for the patient a good diet, get them on a good exercise program, treat them with a good bit of gentleness, recognizing that polymyositis may be a disease that can have some serious associated sequela as well. So we work with this rather gently, but most people will respond to hot baths, at least by feeling much better.
Dr. Thrash, I really have to jump in here, and because I don't think the listeners realize the importance of what you're saying when you talk about the diet. I have to jump in here and force an emphasis here. When you tell people about a vegetarian, low-fat diet with no dairy products, no animal products, and so on, I mean, you really mean this seriously as one of the basic parts of the therapy, right?
Yes, this is that treatment is really a basic one for most types of disease. Since good blood is required to recover from disease, the healthiest blood that one can get is the blood that we have after using a purely vegetarian diet for several months.
Is that about a 10%
months.
Low fat?
Low fat is
10% or what?
We use. At our institute, we use a diet that has no added fat.
Yeah.
But we don't restrict such foods as olives or avocado or nuts or seeds. And, of course, we have some very good fatty acids in grains. And people are unlikely to become deficient in fatty acids with a totally vegetarian diet.
And no dairy and no eggs and no chicken, right? And no
That's
fish.
Right.
You know,
no
somebody chicken. Told me they were vegetarian yesterday. All they ate was fish.
We call that a ovo-lacto-fisho-chico vegetarian.
I like that. Well, you got that message, Kathleen.
Do they think that it could be allergy sensitivity, too, in this disease?
There may be some
like a food allergy. Is that? I'm Dr. John McDougall. I'll be back with more information for your good health. Good evening, Dr. John McDougall. Books, fatigue, the prostate, charcoal, infertility, home remedies, natural healing for vegetarians, PMS, food allergies made simple, home remedies, natural remedies, more natural remedies, natural health care for your child. Poison with a capital C, Dr. Agatha Thrash has written many books that have a common theme, and that is self-help, things that you can do for yourself, simple remedies, non-toxic, low cost, and therefore the potential of them being popular is very little. Let's talk to Kathleen. Kathleen, welcome to Your Good Health.
Yes, hello. Dr. Thrash.
Yes.
Yes, about 3-4 days ago, I discovered a lump under in my left armpit. And then I also noticed, as I discovered it, over the days, it was getting harder to move my arm.
Uh-huh.
It feels like it's in the muscle, and I don't know where to begin with what might be the problem.
Is it painful, Kathleen?
Yeah, it is.
Do you have any kind of infection on your hand or arm or skin?
No.
How about on the breast? Is there any soreness or tenderness around the nipples?
No.
Or in the breast itself?
No.
I'm not certain what it is, Kathleen. It probably, since it's quite tender, it probably is something quite innocuous. You've only known about it 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
What I would recommend is that you take a hot bath, since that fights infection. It also fights inflammation, and it's very likely that this may be one of those, either just a simple inflammation or an infection.
Okay.
And of course, and don't forget to see your doctor too, Kathleen.
Well, yeah. You know, I lost my job a few months ago and I lost my benefits, so mm-hmm. that was the other dilemma.
Uh-huh.
How do I, you know, because my grandma died of, she had a double mastectomy, yeah. and then my mom just was treated for breast cancer.
Well, what Dr. Thrash just told you is that it's not likely breast cancer with those types of symptoms, but you should see your doctor over this. Thank you very much for calling, Kathleen. Martha, welcome to Your Good Health.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a geographic tongue which appeared when I was about 25. I'm now 40. And everyone I ask about it says they have no idea, you know, what causes it or what to do about it. It just comes and goes. But it can be sometimes painful, and it has made me more sensitive to some acidic foods. I don't know which is the cause and which is the result.
Well, you get the tough questions, Dr. Thrash.
I'm wondering if you know anything, Dr. Thrash, about it, more diet-specific things or whatever.
Martha, I'm not certain that I can tell you exactly what to do, but I will tell you that I myself had a geographic tongue for a number of years, and I no longer had it. And the thing that I think may be what cured it is my vegetarian diet, and that I avoid a variety of irritants in my diet, such things as all the spices, ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, and black and red pepper, and vinegar, and any other kind of irritant that might continue some kind of inflammatory process. And after a few years, perhaps 10 or 15 years after we first discovered it, I no longer have it at all. So it may be that these simple things that I did got rid of it. I've recommended this program for a number of people with geographic tongue, and it seems that they do get a benefit from it. So I'd recommend that you do it. But apart from that, I don't know of anything that could help. Do you know of anything, John?
Not a thing. I mean, I would have been totally lost for an answer, but I like that one a lot. Thank you very much for calling, Martha. Deborah, welcome to Your Good Health.
Hi. My husband and I, first of all, are very grateful for you. We just learned about this kind of treatment like in the middle of last week. So I bought two of McDougall's books, and I'm reading those. Our little boy, 5 years old, has had juvenile diabetes for about a year and a half. And, I mean, this idea that there's protein in broccoli, I was totally ignorant of all this. Now, first of all, basically two questions. How to treat it, you know, he's insulin dependent, and how to approach our doctor, because this is really going to be, you know, walking on thin ice.
You take care of juvenile diabetics, Dr. Thrash?
We do, and we put them on a totally vegetarian diet, and we try to eliminate all free fats, that is, fats such as from margarine and mayonnaise, fried foods, cooking fats, salad oils, and even peanut butter. And give the child or the adult with the insulin-dependent diabetes, we give them a totally vegetarian diet. As you know, it is not usually the sugar itself that kills patients with juvenile diabetes, but it is something related to fat metabolism, such as heart disease or strokes or problem with the arteries to the legs. Kidney problems and the like. And so we try to control the diet in such a way that the patient will be the most healthy that they can be. And we believe there is no question whatsoever but that the strict control of the diet is the most important single thing that you can do for a patient with juvenile diabetes.
And Deborah, of course, you understand Dr. Thrash is telling you also the child does need insulin, okay?
Oh, yeah, I know that. You mentioned that in your book.
Yeah, well, you don't misunderstand that at all. That
right.
Without insulin, your child would do very, very poorly. But a good diet is, of course, the foundation to keeping the child alive and intact for many, 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 many years. I'm Dr. John McDougall. I'll be back with more information for your good health. Is the consumer getting wise?
Yes, we believe so. Everywhere, we have a ready audience to talk about home remedies. We find a grassroots movement beginning in some quarters. And, of course, 15 years ago, books on the market dealing with home remedies were maybe three or four. Now they're 50 or 60 or more.
And you're one of the founders. I mean, you and your husband made a huge difference and continue to do so. I want to thank you very much for being my guest.
Oh, it was a delight.
You are one of the most popular people I have on this show, and we'll do it again real soon sometime, okay?
Very good.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thrash.